And now, Coco Enterprises presents How to Talk to Your Advisor with Drew Coco and Tom Shook. To get us started, here's John Hendricks.
And good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
So, boy, I saw you wincing, Tom, when I talked about the investment fund losing 0.1%.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, no, that's when you said $3 million at first, I was like, well, I wonder how much is actually in there, because I can't imagine it was going to be that big of a, on a percentage basis. So that's kind of what I was thinking about.
Yeah. Well, that's a big whew.
I'll say so.
Okay. Well, today we're going to dive into some other exciting adventures in finance.
That's right. So right now, we're rounding the corner and we're heading into the home stretch of this tax year. And folks are gathering up all their tax documents. And now, these aren't the easiest things to read. These tax documents you get, your W-2s, your 1099s, your K-1s. And although taxes are a certainty for most folks, the way that investments are taxed varies. And it's really important to have a basic understanding of how taxes apply to your investment accounts. The way investments are taxed can vary depending on the type of investment, the type of account being used, and how long the investment has been held. Now we're going to start off and go through some basic investments and go over how they're taxed.
Yeah. All right. So we'll just start off with the good old common stock. So let's say that you own shares of Microsoft. If you're a holder of Microsoft, you're going to typically pay capital gains tax. And there's two kinds of capital gains tax. There's short-term capital gains tax and long-term capital gains. So now the idea here is that the government is basically incentivizing you to hold on to these stocks for the long term, because they want you to save for retirement, et cetera. So they incentivize the long-term capital gains, meaning that they give them you typically pay lower taxes on long-term gains than you do on short-term gains. So typically for somebody that holds if you held Microsoft for 1 year or longer, you're most likely going to pay tax somewhere in the 15% rate. The highest you could pay is 20%. The lowest you could pay is zero if your income's low enough. But typically, it's going to be from 0 to 20% at the most. On the short-term capital gains end of it, you're going to pay a little bit higher, because short-term capital gains are taxed at your income tax rate. So if you're in the 22 or I think up to 37%, you could end up paying quite a bit more on short-term capital gains than long-term capital gains. And just to clarify is that the gain is if you put $10,000 into the stock and it appreciates to, let's say, $12,000, you're paying tax on that $2,000 worth of earnings.
Right.
So basically, they don't want you just sticking your toe in the water. They want you to actually invest.
They do. Yep. They don't want you trading every second.
Right. Yeah. They prefer you hold on to these things.
They prefer.
And it's the same thing with dividends.
That's right. So sometimes stocks, like Microsoft in this case, also pay dividends. Now, dividends are taxed slightly differently, and there's two types of dividends. One's called a qualified dividend, and the other is called a non-qualified dividend. And it gets a little confusing, but basically a qualified dividend, you have to be a certain type of corporation, and you have to hold the stock 60 days before the ex-dividend date, or at least 60 days within a 121-day period. So it gets a little confusing, but think you have to own it for a while to get that qualified dividend. And the qualified dividend is going to be taxed at your capital gains rate. Now, a non-qualified dividend is pretty much anything else that doesn't qualify for that special tax treatment, and that's going to be taxed at your regular ordinary income rate.
That's right. And just kind of like a pro tip or a fun fact is that when banks tell you that they pay dividends, actually, they're taxed as interest. So you're going to get a 1099 INT, or what they call 1099 right. INT. And even though it's kind of funny, because they'll call them up and they'll tell you what their dividend is paying, but technically it's taxed as interest. So, and I don't know where the jargon got mixed up there, but when they say dividends, it's actually taxed as interest.
Well, that's credit unions use the term dividends instead of interest.
Sure. And I don't know how much of a fun fact. I think we'll go with pro tip on that.
Okay.
That's not very much fun.
Good point. Yeah. All right. So we'll move on to bonds. Bonds are the same way, essentially. So with interest on bonds, is that those are going to be taxed as ordinary income. And then you can also pay capital gains tax on bonds too. And so if you hold a bond and it appreciates in value and you sell it before its maturity date, you actually make money on the bond, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on those earnings. And it's the same way if you sell it for a loss. You can take capital losses on a bond that you would sell early. And remember, that has to do with what current interest rates are paying. So if you have a 1% bond and you can buy the same bond that's paying 3%, you know, you might have to sell your 1% bond for a loss because nobody wants to buy it when they could buy one paying 3%.
Right. Yeah. So that brings us to different types of funds. Now, ETFs, exchange-traded funds, and mutual funds. But ETFs can pretty much be categorized as a stock. Dividends and capital gains, just like a stock. Now, mutual funds, they're a little bit different. Sometimes mutual funds have special tax treatments. Some are designed to be more tax efficient. But I think what really gets folks is mutual funds can be a little sneaky. Is they can actually, you can take a capital loss on a mutual fund. You can buy it for $100 and it goes down to $90 and realize a loss or a gain. And also assume a loss. So I kind of got my thoughts backwards there. So think if a mutual fund appreciates, you can still be taxed on it.
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm. And the sneaky thing with mutual funds is we have to remember that each fund holds a bunch of different, you know, some funds hold a bunch of different stocks inside. Mutual funds can hold all kinds of different things, but just for simplicity, let's just say they hold a bunch of stocks and the fund manager is buying and selling those stocks. Well, if he's generating a lot of capital gains, the fund manager is going to do you the favor and pass those capital gains taxes on to you.
Right.
So it's real important that if you're going to buy a mutual fund and you're going to buy it, let's say on like December 20th, you want to call your financial advisor or call the fund company and just find out how many embedded capital gains are in that fund, because you could buy it on December 20th and then at the end of the year you get a capital gains distribution when realistically your fund hasn't really done anything yet. So it's just kind of a nice little surprise at the end of the year.
How would you like to feel to assume a bunch of losses in a mutual fund and then get hit with a tax bill on capital gains?
Yeah. And just on 20 days of being in it.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Or if your fund's down but you're still paying capital gains taxes. Exactly. That's a hard one.
They're sneaky, but ETFs, that's not the case.
Right.
That's only with mutual funds.
That's right. An
ETF? Say that again.
Exchange-traded fund. Okay. Think it's like a mutual fund. It's like a pooled investment. This would probably make a good topic for a future talk.
Yeah.
But it's a pooled investment, but it's traded on an exchange instead of redeemed at a mutual fund company.
Next, you know, moving on, real estate, and obviously you could, there's been books written about real estate taxation, but at the 35,000, you know, helicopter flyover level, if you buy your house and then sell it for a gain, you're obviously going to have to pay capital gains taxes on that, and then you also have to pay attention to long-term and short-term capital gains on your real estate as well. And like I said, there's a bunch of exemptions, there's a bunch of write-offs and deductions and the kind of stuff you can do, but on a 35,000 foot view, that's you know, essentially how it works.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then one final one that's been popular in the last few years is cryptocurrency. Now, how is this taxed?
I don't even understand it, let alone how to tax it.
And a lot of the IRS is kind of getting their grip on it as well. But mostly now it's treated as a capital gain or a capital loss. But right now, they are exempt from the wash sale rule.
Yeah. So the wash sale rule basically it prevents you from selling a stock and then immediately buying back and just taking the loss for the year. With cryptocurrency, technically, you're allowed to do that still. There's a lot of effort to get that removed, or at least classified as a security, so you can't do that. But right now, you're technically allowed to do that, but there is something called the economic substance doctrine, which the IRS can hit you with if they feel like there wasn't any economic substance to your trade. So for instance, you know, if you could prove to them that you reduced your position or you sold cryptocurrency to reduce the volatility in your portfolio, that would be okay. But if it looks like it was purely done to lock in losses, they might not allow that.
This is where I like to stick my fingers in my ear and go, la, la.
Yeah.
Maybe dance around the cryptocurrency stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of folks have lost money on cryptocurrency this year.
Yeah. So, yes.
After making a lot, now they're losing a lot.
You don't hear about cryptocurrency as much. It was all the rage in 2020 and in 2021 as well. But now, cryptocurrency holders are a little silent. Yeah.
Nobody likes to brag about their losses.
Exactly. Yeah. it's not as cool.
But that might help you tax-wise.
You could. Take the losses.
And there's some strategy to that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of taxes, there are some ways that we can skip the taxes altogether on our investments. I'd love to hear about that after this.
Winter weather may be lingering in the Flathead, but Whitefish Marine and RV is gearing up for another fabulous spring and summer of water sports, camping, boats, and RVs. Our current selection of boats and RVs are the envy of the valley, but you'll have to come in soon to see what's available before it's too late. Know that Whitefish Marine and RV can custom order your dream boat or RV with their highly experienced staff. They will take care of you from start to finish. They even take care of financing your new boat or RV. Don't forget, summer is just around the corner. It'll soon be time to summerize your boat or RV. So schedule that appointment now at Whitefish Marine and RV. And while you're at Whitefish Marine and RV, check it out and replenish your boat and camping accessories with our new accessory and pro shop stock arriving daily. Whitefish Marine and RV at the corner of Highway 93 South and Highway 40. Call or text 406-862-8594 today.
Like any good agent, we're here for the open house, for the closing, for handing over keys. But because we're Realtors, we're here for so much more. Agents who are Realtors volunteer at nearly three times the national average. We're working to broaden access to credit, increase affordable housing supply, and ensure fair housing for all. And Realtors are bound by a code of ethics. We're here for it all. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Let's return to How to Talk with Your Advisor with Drew Coco and Tom Shook.
KGEZ and How to Talk to Your Advisor. All right. Talk to me about how I can save tax money on
save
securities.
Tax money. Yeah, some tax investments are tax-free. What a beautiful phrase, right?
Yes.
Now, I should probably say tax-preferred, because a true tax-free investment is probably as easy as making a left-hand turn on Main Street. But sometimes you can get close. Now, securities, we'll just call those, we'll start off with talking about federal debt, T-bills, right, which have been popular, bonds, notes, any kind of a federal government-issued debt. You're only going to pay ordinary income tax on your federal tax rate. They're exempt from state and local taxes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and the same thing with municipal bonds, same deal, is that except if you buy like a Montana municipal bond, you get not only federal taxes exempt, but also state taxes as well. And those are kind of like a darling. When they were paying better, you know, 10 years ago, those were things were going like hotcakes. Mm-hmm. Not so much anymore because the yields have come down a little bit, but it's a pretty good deal.
And some folks still remember munis being popular. They say, I want to buy some munis right now, but you really have to do your due diligence and determine if it's a good deal. Like Tom said, with a muni, if it's in the state and it qualifies, you may not pay any kind of income taxes whatsoever, which is really cool. But sometimes you have to look at the yield it's paying and then compare it to other types of bonds or T-bills, because sometimes, even though it's paying a lower rate, it may be worth it just to eat the taxes and buy something
maybe
else.
Maybe what you're doing is you're using your goodwill to help out the government or help out portion of you, maybe your city or your county.
Exactly. And that's if you want to invest that way, that's perfectly fine. Some folks just don't like the idea of paying taxes. And we'll show them, be like, you know, it makes more sense to pay some taxes and buy this. It's better for you. But they say, no, you know, I rest easier knowing that this is tax-free. I'm helping out a local municipality or local state. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
As long as you do your due diligence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we talked about some types of investments and how they're taxed. Now, it also depends on what kind of account you have.
Yeah.
Some investment accounts are what's called tax deferred, which means anytime there's growth within it, you don't pay any tax, you don't pay any interest, dividends, capital gains, it's all deferred. And some of those accounts are one we've talked about before, traditional style RIAs, IRAs, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs.
And you know, the thing here is that we just gotta be careful, like which, you know, you get, annuities can fall in this category as well. And you gotta be real, pay a lot of attention to which assets you're putting into these types of accounts. Cause like we talked about, you don't want a tax-free, you know, municipal bond sitting in your IRA, because that's like wearing a belt with suspenders, as we like to say.
Your pants are already up with the belt. You don't need to add suspenders. You don't get bonus points for deferring it twice.
We see a lot of annuities inside IRAs too. Right. It's kind of interesting.
So. Right. Yeah. Or a 401k or whole life insurance policies are also tax deferred. So it's best to just be diversified and take a hard look at what you're investing and where you're investing it, and also how long you're holding it.
Absolutely. All right. So let's see, we're at, I guess, federal taxes. We talked about that, the T-bill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we went over T-bills. Yeah, you get federal taxes on those. And so the big thing is just, you know, with understanding, you know, the type of investments that you have and understanding the type of taxes on the accounts that you have. And then, you know, the fancy word for in the investment world is asset location. Right. And so we want to make sure we're putting, you know, investments in the accounts that complement each other. So right. we don't want tax-deferred investments sitting in tax-deferred accounts. And that's kind of the overarching point to today's talk, is that we want to make real careful where we're putting our investments in our accounts, so that we're not where we're not wearing a belt and suspenders.
Right. And some folks, they like to trade a lot. Say you have an account and you like to buy and sell stocks quite a bit. Well, that's going to be subject to a lot of short-term capital gains, which remember aren't as preferred as long-term capital gains. You might as well do that within a tax-deferred account instead of a taxable account.
Yeah.
However, some folks may be able to benefit from some tax loss harvesting, where you harvest the loss and it reduces your tax bill. So it really does you good to do your due diligence in get with your tax professional, get with your advisor and say, hey, how can I be the most efficient with how I'm investing so I don't get slammed with an unnecessarily large tax bill?
Well, you can get yourself in trouble here if you're not real careful.
You certainly can.
You wanna start, when you start doing stuff like that, you want to start paying attention, and you're going to get a 1099 that's going to be like 3 inches thick if you're doing a lot of day trading.
Or sometimes if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get that K-1.
Yeah.
Folks don't
like
to say.
Right, you don't like those K-1s.
Yeah. All right, you guys, you've given me, I guess what I'd have to say is a whole new respect for what you guys do and having to just understand all this stuff.
It's pretty simple, but like you said, you can get yourself in trouble. So yeah. It does help to talk to your advisor about it.
Well, you say it's simple because it's what you deal with every day. I've never dealt with anything like that, and now I understand that I better get help.
Well, hopefully you have someone that does.
That's the idea here. Gosh. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for joining us for COCO Enterprises, How to Talk to Your Advisor. We'll be here next Thursday at 12:45. If you missed some or you'd like to share it with friends, find today's and past shows on our Facebook page or online at kgez.com.